It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Well, I agree, Alan. I agree with everything he just said on that advert just there. Well, hello there, listeners. You're back on Radio Flange Goblet, and we've just got time for a quick lowdown on just some of the things you can look forward to coming up on Radio Flange Goblet this spring. All of my wigs are beige, an 18-part series on fake hair maintenance in the 15th century hosted by Lionel Ludlow Pinky, a hair expert from the Paraguay Institute of Toupee Studies and Historical Wig Maintenance, and David Hasselhoff, who also provides musical interludes and tiny, tiny leather pants. My Liquid, Your Head Topper. Not much is known about this series yet, but it's out of Norway and it seems to involve 14 large burly men taking it turns to urinate into Jamiroquai's hats. Countdown to the Apocalypse and Other Sad Realities of Modern Existence. Three bearded professors from very prestigious schools from around the world, all with appropriate tweed jackets, attempt to watch an endless loop of ice caps melting, animals becoming extinct, and Donald Trump, but each week end up weeping hopelessly into a bucket. And lastly, Women Over 40 Get Naked Too, hosted in the nude, of course, by Sharon Stone, Julianne Moore, Helen Mirren, Susan Sarandon, Halle Berry, Jennifer Lopez, and a Patrick Swayze lookalike dressed as a Christmas tree, eating a bologna sandwich and occasionally interjecting outdated swear words and non sequiturs about Juliana Margulies. But now on Radio Flange Goblet, the After Movie Diet. Come in here. Celia, put that down. Nobody wants that. Nobody needs to see it or hear it. Come in here. Sit down. That's it. Gladys, come right here. Janice, come. Look, all of you, come in here. You're really going to want to hear this. You're going to want to hear this right now. You know, right. Shut up. No. Shut up. Everyone, be quiet. Sit there. Right. Okay, George, I'm going to count you in. Okay, and then you say the thing that we agreed upon. All right. Here we go, George. One, two. Three.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of the After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
Did you hear that? Did you hear the sweet, sweet, sweet dulcet tones of George right there saying my name on the podcast? My goodness. George, do that again. Say that again. I want to hear that again. Oh, it's so good. I hope you all heard that. Here we go. George, take it away one more time.
The After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
Okay, George, just one more time, but with like a different inflection, kind of like you're a bit weird and crazy.
You're listening to The After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
That's perfect. You sounded completely mad. Anyway, in all seriousness, though, that is the sweet, amazing, wonderful, deep, and vibrant dulcet tones of the now legendary in my life, George Spike Reel. And you can find him over at voice123.com/SpikeReel. That's SpikeReel. And he does voiceovers for commercials and promos and audiobooks and video games and podcasts and all sorts of amazing stuff. And he on Facebook was giving away 30 words for free of his voiceover stuff and was very gracious because I gave him 30 words to say and then he came up with a whole bunch of other stuff and gave me lots of different options. So from now on, George will be our official announcer here on the After Movie Diner and you will hear his voice throughout the shows and it's absolutely tremendous. But I would love, because obviously he gave us this wonderful deal for 30 words for free. I would love people to patronize his service and use him for their shows. It's not expensive, and we'll do all sorts of voices, whatever you need and whatever you want to say, for very, very reasonable prices. So if you like what you hear from George Spike Reel, check him out over at voice123.com/SpikeReel. And that's R-E-A-L, even though his name is spelled R-I-E-L. So check him out at voice123.com and make a PayPal payment today and get your voiceover done by one of the most lovely and professional voice actors I've ever worked with. But with that, it is up to me to introduce this week's guest. So, cue the music. To call our guest this episode a mere man would be a vast understatement. He rides majestic atop a half-eagle, half-bear, half-stallion, draped in several American flags that were hand-stitched by the founding fathers themselves, through a land of wolves and lumberjacks, under a giant red and white striped moon in a blue starry sky that is lit up by raw and powerful lightning. He is carrying a machete flecked with the blood, vomit, and semen of his enemies, and in the other hand, a legally registered firearm around which is wrapped the actual Constitution of the United States. His Native American name is Freedom. He shits manliness, pisses truth, and comes justice. He bathes in the sweet, sweet creams of Pegasus and Cleopatra. He drives a hearty sex wagon that roars out freedom. He's a podcaster the likes of which the world has never seen, a stand-up comedian banned in Europe, Asia, and Australia for being just too damn free and not in any way a filthy communist. And of course, it goes without saying, he's a fucking local legend. He's also a better damned carpenter than Jesus H. Christ. It's the one, the only, J. Freedom Mayo.
Wow, I feel like I was a bit undersold there. I don't think you hyped me quite enough, John. But thank you so much. That you were right. That was literally the greatest introduction any man has ever gotten in the history of words.
No words have ever been put together quite that majestic, I feel. And if you are the leader of a brave new generation of men, then please let me be your poet laureate.
Oh, but it would be an honor and a pleasure.
And of course, Matt Farley, your merry minstrel. Take him out of the equation. Because right. When two local legends get together, I feel the force of all local legends humming around us.
Yeah, we're like a Voltron of local legends.
We're like a local legend collective, electric, powerful, raw, thrusting. I keep going back to penises. It keeps coming
up. That's
all
you ever think about.
It keeps coming up wangs, no matter what I do.
Right. Everything's coming up wangs.
Everything's coming up wangs. And that's almost the perfect way to introduce tonight's movie. Earlier today, I was thinking I'd really like to podcast this week quite a lot, because I would like a nice surplus of podcasting, in the old, bank so I can just put them out when I wish. And, I put out a collective, message and, Mr. Mayo thankfully responded and he sent me a list of movies that he had been watching recently. And, one of the movies on the list was 1990's Getting Lucky by director Michael Paul Gerard. And I had recently been toying with the idea of doing an ongoing series on the Aftermovie Diner of what our colleague and other local legend, Moses Porn, refers to as 80s sex rumps. Or just 80s rumps, if you like. Because I had fun doing a few podcasts with Mo about them in the past, and I thought maybe occasionally the Aftermovie Diner gets a little saucy, but in an 80s way.
Right.
So when I saw Getting Lucky on the list, which is one of those, or certainly billed as one of those 80s rumps, although it's late 80s, early 90s, I thought, sure, let's do that. I saw it on the list. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, ye of little faith. You didn't even look at the plot summary of that movie. You just saw, oh, 80s sex romp. I'm going to watch that. You had no idea what you were in for.
No. I mean, I knew that it involved a leprechaun, an alcoholic leprechaun. And I thought maybe it was going to go the way, you know, because in the 80s, especially Charles Band, but also Roger Corman and Jim Wynorski and various people were making movies like, obviously Gremlins was the main one, but they did Ghoulies and Munchies and there were like Terror Toons, which was like cartoon ones. And then there was Doll Man and obviously Puppet Master. Like everyone was getting obsessed with having like small stuff running around.
Right.
So I assumed that it would be a sex romp, but with like a comically tiny leprechaun kind of jollying up the proceedings. I didn't realize quite what it would be.
Everyone remembers high school.
The rate I'm going, I'll have enough money saved up for college by the time I'm 990 years old.
There's always the nerd.
This is Bill Higgins, the new Buckskins Cowboy.
Cowboy! Cowboy!
The meathead jock.
Hey, Chrissy, I heard you finally broke up with Brian McCulloch.
Well, how about you and me getting together sometime?
The bodacious cheerleader.
You know who I really like? It's Chrissy Shackler. I've had a crush on her ever since the seventh grade.
I'm not Jesus Christ, I'm a leprechaun.
The leprechaun?
How'd you end up in a beer bottle, Lepke?
It's me punishment for being a drunk lad. I have to grant someone three wishes.
Three wishes, huh?
I wish for a date with Chrissy Shackler.
Exeter, Flexeter, Fee-Fi-Fo-Flacker. You've been a date with the last Chrissy Shackler.
I would like to go out with you.
You feel like making a hole in one.
Will you marry me?
I don't want you making the same mistake I did.
Is that what I am, a mistake?
Well, if it's money you're worried about, I've saved up enough to get through med school.
What Chrissy had to say about me last night when you were taking her home? I'm gonna ram this tennis racket so far up your ass, you're gonna look like a human shish kebab.
She has to f*** the winner.
I've had enough of this.
Lepke, what'd you do? Get us back to normal size before...
Bill?
Chrissy, I'm down here.
What were you planning on doing with this?
Nothing.
Don't you lie!
Please give me another chance.
I don't think so, Bill.
Just remember, the minute you stop believing in magic, that's when your life starts turning into a big pile of horse pucky.
Sorrow life can bring, it's love changes.
I love you, Lepke.
So, sir, did you want to, as I've done quite a lot of talking already, did you want to take it away with a little bit of the plot summary and then we'll delve into specifics?
Sure. Well, getting lucky, this is a good one. So high school nerd, he's trying to save the world and make a little money. So he decides that he's going to recycle empty bottles and cans to make a little bit of extra money. Maybe he can buy a car. Maybe he can even go to college. He stumbles across a bottle that has an alcoholic leprechaun stuck inside of the bottle. And the leprechaun explains to him that he cannot get out of the bottle until A, he sobers up, and B, grants three wishes to somebody. So they go on a whole bunch of hijinks where the nerd is trying to impress the local high school cheerleader and also not get beat up by the lead basketball player, whatever you call that, you know, like the star basketball player. And of course, all kinds of hijinks ensue when this raging alcoholic of a leprechaun, which is again stuck inside of a beer bottle, is trying to grant wishes but can't really do so because he's so drunk. All of this leads to the cheerleader falling for the nerdy guy and them trying to get married and live happily ever after.
Right, but with the shadow of the, I'm just going to come out and say it, exceptionally rapey high school guy, Tony.
Right. Yeah, Tony, the raping basketball player.
There's
no real better way to explain what he does other than tries to rape everybody.
And it's but specifically Chrissy. Let's get into that a little bit. So initially, Tony, we see him and the basketball lot, and then we see the cheerleaders, one of whom is apparently a French exchange student.
Right, and she's also about 35 years old.
Definitely 35.
Furthermore, this Tony the rape and basketball guy is also about 30 years old.
Oh, at least, at the very least. Now, the Babette, the French exchange student, when Chrissy is saying she's thinking of meeting Tony around the back of the gym, which is code for... Getting it on. High school style. Well, I thought high school style, but actually
This is more like college style.
Yeah, or even, insidious, disgusting, criminal banker, behind a dumpster kind of style, really.
Right, yeah.
It's not pleasant. All the ladies in the locker room say, but he's met me behind the gym, and he's met me behind the gym, and he's met me behind the gym. But then she wistfully looks into the mirror and says, but he is so hunky.
Right.
So we know already at the beginning of the movie that the sexual politics is out the window. And look, I make no bones about it that 80s sex romps are horribly misogynistic. But that's kind of the whole point of them. They're sort of enjoyable in their own way. I always look at them as kind of like, they are to comedy what slasher films are to horror. We're aware that they're not masterpieces, and we're aware that they're not, socially going to change the world, but they are kind of base fun entertainment usually.
Right.
So I didn't go into this thinking that it was going to be, politically correct. And again, I feel, especially in current times, that political correctness has gone far too far and people have lost their fucking sense of humor. However, this movie kind of went too far the other way initially.
Right. I think the other thing to keep in mind here is also this is a Troma team release.
Yeah.
It's not a Troma produced movie, but Troma did eventually release it. So keep in mind, Troma is well known for being over the top, sexualized, and tons of gore and political incorrectness. So when you put it in that vein, it's like, oh, okay, then it's just an average Troma movie. Like, that's, you know what you're getting into before you watch it.
Yeah, but I feel that even with Troma films, especially the ones they make, there's always sort of a heightened either fantasy element or surreal element, or like the way they make things is just of in a heightened reality. And not to say that this is, perfectly realistic. It isn't. Of course, there's a miniature leprechaun in a beer bottle. But
right.
The biggest problem, I'll say this before we go on so that we can then just go on and enjoy the movie, because I did ultimately kind of enjoy the movie, but for what it was. But I'll say this. The biggest problem with this movie is that it was very, very independent at the time. I think the major budget comes to about 20 grand, and it's shot without any permits in and around Los Angeles, essentially. And it stars, certainly in the people who play the main two, well, Tony and Chrissy, it stars two people, Tony, who is the aggressor, and Chrissy, who is the object of the desire. It stars two people who would never go on to do anything again, and who certainly had not done anything before this. So it stars two people who are not in any way actors or performers. And so that lends, unfortunately, a kind of horribly realistic kind of awkwardness to the scenes where they are being intimate, which if it was a bigger budgeted, glossier studio made movie a la like something like Porky's or Police Academy or even Hots or Hard Bodies or any of those kind of movies, because they would all be actors or performers or even maybe softcore, you know, strippers or whatever it is, they would all feel very comfortable with it. And it would kind of be joyful and it would kind of be acceptable. And you could kind of, this, you feel like you are sort of awkwardly spying unpleasantly on two people you may have actually gone to school with. It's sort of, right. It's sort of that takes you out of the movie a little bit. You're too aware that this is someone who, if she was paid anything at all, you know, is more or less being asked to do things on camera that is, you know, a little bold, let's say, and it comes across as awkward. And I suppose that's my biggest thing against this movie is I like the 80s romps because normally they are, even if they are low budget, they're made, I assume, by a professional crew with professional people there, and everyone knows what they're in for. This kind of feels like maybe not everyone knew what they were exactly in for. And then to have a script that is constantly having this woman, certainly in the first act of the movie, saying, okay then, but no, no, no. Okay then, but no, no, no. It's such a horrible, horrible fucking message. It's such right. a horrible, horrible fucking thing that it was a little uncomfortable to watch. However, halfway through, the movie does at least acknowledge that Tony is an aggressive. It doesn't condone his actions. It
right.
steadfastly condemns them. So it kind of lets him off the hook a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly make him out to be the quote-unquote bad guy in the movie. They're, at no point are they like, hey, he's going around trying to rape people, and that's all right. We'll just gloss over that. I mean, he clearly is the bad guy, and, I mean, he doesn't necessarily get what he deserves, but at least he does get in trouble for doing the things that he does.
Yeah. So,
and I think to go back to what you were saying before about, you know, them not being professional actors and it seeming a little more creepy than it should, I think the thing to agree with that, to make another point, is that because there is clearly such a huge age difference between Tony and Chrissy,
yeah,
clearly Chrissy is maybe 18, 19, 20 years old, and Tony's got to be at least 30 years old. Now, I get it. He's like a muscular, good-looking guy, and that's why they cast him in that role. But you're right in that if these were two polished actors or even unpolished actors, but you knew they were actors and they were cast better, you would say, all right, you can believe the world that they live in, that they go to the same school and what have you. But the fact that these are untrained actors and there's such a real-life age difference between the two, you're like, oh, this man is trying to rape this child. That's what I was thinking throughout the first act. Like, what's happening here? Like, why is nobody stepping in? I need an adult.
Yeah. But without us, it does. We have now set that this movie is problematic. Saying that, though, this movie did, over the course of its very short running time of, I think it's about 85 minutes long, it did slowly win me over because it does kind of get inventive and goofy and weird and starts to kind of embrace the silliness of the situation,
right.
Which is a lot more fun. And, you know, I mean, we won't even get into the fact that the leprechaun, for example, grants Bill way more than three wishes.
Well, yeah,
so the thing at the end where he's like, well, you have to get me to grant you one more wish. I'm like, he's already done about 75 things.
I like they add that in a little bit after. They're like, well, I've been granting them these wishes, but they didn't really pan out 100% the way I intended them. So those ones don't really count. And you're like, I wish I had that kind of leprechaun in my life. Like,
right, exactly.
I know leprechauns don't exist, but I mean, that's really a stretch of the imagination. Like, I was only about 85% on that wish. So you get a couple extras.
Yeah. which is wonderful. I mean, there is a plucky friendship formed between them. between the wonderful Gary Kluger, who plays the leprechaun Lepke.
Lepke the leprechaun. They got real inventive with the names.
They did. And he had a little bit of a career. Not much, but he had been acting for about a decade before this movie came along.
Great accent. They put the voice modulator on him to have a really high voice, and he did a great pseudo-Irish accent. I liked it a lot.
But after this, you'll be glad to know that he was in one episode of Babylon 5 as Man.
Oh, hey, coming from a guy that plays people that they're like, oh, shit, I guess we have to give him a name. I love when people play Man. That's my favorite. I've been Man.
Yeah, so Gary Kluger in Babylon 5 episode Signs and Portents from 1994 plays Man. This was a fairly large role for him, and bless him for that. Babette, the actress who played Babette, Jean Stewart, went on to be in Class of Newcome High, parts 2 and 3, and was in the director's previous effort, believe it or not, Oversexed Rug Suckers from Mars. That was the director's first film. And I believe is the movie that is screening on the drive-in when our heroes, Bill and Chrissy, go to the drive-in.
That's right. I think you're right about that.
Because it definitely looked that way. The fun that this movie has is very often in its the way it matches up audio with what's going on. The stuff that's on TV that's meant to be sort of Animal Planet, but ends up just being about sex. The teacher talking about the Grand Canyon when our hero Bill is miniaturized inside the underwear of Chrissy.
It was a real Honey, I Shrunk the Kid situation.
Yes, except it's more Honey Pot Shrunk the Kid.
Yeah.
Or I Shrunk the Kids more of, into the Honey
Pot. It was more Honey, I Shrunk the Kids meets Debbie Does Dallas.
Yes. So, going back to me, it's a nerdy guy, and there's a lot of... The other thing that kind of won me over is that the movie is filled with, like you said, a sort of ecological message. This guy does want to, like, help the world. He does want to end guns and violence and war and various other things.
Right, he wants to become a doctor, and he wants to, you know... there's a line towards the end where he says, like, I know it sounds crazy that two people could save the world, but I guess we should try anyway, or something like that, you know? Yeah.
The actual line, I believe, as it's one of the only quotes on IMDb, is... I know it's impossible for one person, or even two people, to heal the whole world. But if each of us could just heal a little tiny part of it, think what a world that would be.
And I believe he uses that phrase a bunch of times throughout the movie, right?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, if we got rid of guns, think about what kind of world that would be.
And it's
and then he looks up and to the left every time. You know, it's one of those moments where... You know, to put a little punctuation on it, he just looks up and to the left.
And it's almost earnest. I don't feel like it's necessarily taking the piss out of that point of view. I mean, it kind of wants to have its cake and eat it too. It is kind of joking about it. But at the same time, like, there's kind of a sweet montage with him and Chrissy picking up crap at the side of the road, putting it in a bin bag. And it ends with her getting a piggyback and... You know, it's nice the way that Chrissy, because their first date is essentially set up by the leprechaun. And then it turns out that she is simply using Bill to get to the drive-in so that she can have a tryst with Tony.
Right, who recently earlier in that day tried to rape her, not once, but twice.
Yes. Wait a minute. Twice?
So he tried to behind the school, and then he went to her house and tried to do the same, and the mother walked in and kicked him out.
Yes,
which
course.
Is why they had to set up this whole fake date situation with Bill so that the mother didn't find out that they were going into the drive-in together.
Yeah. So when that fails again, Bill gets her home and doesn't hold it against her. He drives her home and doesn't hold it against her. And he also stops Tony again from having his way. And she realizes the next morning the error of her ways. And they have kind of a sweet thing then. I know it's kind of stupid, but it is kind of sweet, right?
I think she sees, like, oh, maybe he's not just a nerd. Like, he's a good person. Like, he's a nice guy. Like, why wouldn't I give this guy a shot? Because he's not, like, a handsome basketball player. There are other people in the world, you know? Like, she just never gave him a shot, I guess.
And I think what's interesting is once you've seen the whole film, and this is why I would tell people to kind of sit through the awkward bits at the beginning, is that the movie, by the end of it, is essentially, first of all, it's on the nerd side. It's definitely on the nerd side. Secondly, it's definitely saying, you know that jock from high school? He's probably a rapist. You know what I mean? Like it's
which may very well be true, depending on what school you went to.
It's condemning those people. And, you know, and it has this, like, jokey kind of leprechaun, and then later on a police subplot, which is very silly and comical. I feel like in the script, the director's intention is to have some, like, positivity there. I don't think it's just to, like, I mean, obviously it just wants to show tits and ass as well, but that there is some underlying message. Not that I'm looking too deeply in it. It's written right there in the script, but
I mean, yeah, they did try to write humor into it. They did try to write in a bit of maybe, I don't even want to say, like, I mean, to say that there's, like, social commentary in it, I wouldn't go that far. I don't think that they thought that far into it. But, you know, obviously they were trying to write a story with a protagonist and an antagonist. And you know, they were trying to, although the beginning is awkward with Tony being so aggressive, again, towards the end, you know, he does get in trouble for doing what he was doing.
Well, he gets arrested, which is the first thing. Right. And then later on, when he is set free, he then gets his comeuppance, and we'll talk about that nearer the end. No, I'm not saying there's social commentary or there's any worth to this film.
Well, hey, it's for sheer entertainment value, for someone like myself who, if you're not going to watch, like, a big Hollywood blockbuster, yeah, I like to watch a movie where at the end of the movie, I have said to myself out loud, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you watch a good B movie, which I wouldn't even consider this a B movie, I just consider this like an average 80s indie flick. Yeah. But when you watch a movie like that or a B movie, I want it to be weird. I want there to be a raging alcoholic, tiny leprechaun stuck in a beer bottle. I want a high school kid to carry around a beer bottle that he talks into, and no one says a word about it.
Yeah,
like, and it's super weird, but that's what I like about it.
And it's sort of like, I know it's probably got about double the budget, but it's only one step up from, not in content, but in production value, it's about one step up from what Matt and Charlie do, from what Charlie and Farley do, in terms of, you know, these people who have never acted again, those were probably friends of the director. You know, he was at college at the time. And so the film was shot in 2 weeks. The director was living in a van when he made this movie, which does add a creep level to the
right. So now we know why he wrote in the beginning parts, because yes, I'm sure that's the kind of seedy lifestyle he was accustomed to.
The majority of the movie was shot in various locations without permits. And I read somewhere that he was still at, oh yeah, the exteriors for the high school were filmed at Santa Monica College in Santa Monica, California. Moreover, writer-director Michael Paul Gerard was still attending Santa Monica College when he made this movie. So I would imagine that a whole bunch of these people were probably at that college. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or at least were kind of friends or colleagues or whatever of him. You know, except the odd one, like, for example, Jean Stewart, who played Babette. She had been in his first movie. Then she goes on to be in some other trauma stuff. So, you know, she had some aspiration.
She was actually trying.
Right. And, you know, because I'm sure Uncle Lloyd saw her in this and went, oh, do you want to be in some of our other movies, you know?
Uncle Lloyd saw her and was like, I can use those tits again.
Yeah, exactly. And she
and then
seems,
he did. Yeah. And then he absolutely did twice.
He absolutely did twice. But that's what I mean. Like, if you go into it with the idea that instead of, like, Charlie and Farley are trying to make... the pit style straight to VHS weirdo Canadian horror movies of the 80s. This guy got together 20 grand and decided to make his own version of a supernatural sex romp film.
Right. Which let's agree, that's the best kind of sex romp.
It is.
The supernatural kind.
Supernatural kind. And it, I think the one thing it missed. Was some form, like, I didn't particularly like the leprechaun being in the bottle. I would have preferred it had it been a little person dressed as a dressed as a leprechaun, and be talking like that, you know, and doing like a little, like, and then maybe at the end.
So you wanted an actual little person?
Yes, a midget. Yeah,
right, as the leprechaun, not a full sized man.
No.
That they just shot from the top down to make him seem small,
yeah,
and then also put a graphic around it to make it look like you were looking through the top of a beer bottle. You actually wanted a small person.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Hey, listen, I'm in. I'm sure. Again, limited budget. We all know little people, more money. That's how it works, right? The smaller the person. Smaller the person, the bigger the paycheck.
Bigger
the
trailer.
It.
Yeah, that's the way it works. Smaller the person, bigger the trailer. That's why Al Pacino gets the big bucks, because he is tiny. But no, I would have liked that. And then I maybe would have liked, what if the leprechaun had his eye on a little person, a little lady person. I don't know what the term is. A lady little person. A little person who is a lady. A female.
I think they call those women. I'm pretty sure they call that a woman.
A tiny, tiny woman.
Right.
Who also maybe had a shower scene. What I'm basically trying to say is I want to see a midget lady naked in the shower.
That's why they created the internet, I'm pretty sure.
No, I've seen it, but I want to see it in this movie.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I feel like that's a bit awkward. That would be a fun thing for the diner patrons to go ahead and explore the internet.
Yes.
See if you can find a good sex romp that has a little person in it that has a nude scene.
Yeah.
MoPorn, look that up. MoPorn, I feel like you're the man for the job.
Yeah.
Let us know.
And right, it has to be a legitimate sex romp. It can't be just a porn movie or a softcore porn movie. It has to be like a legitimate... Because the thing about sex romps is 90% titillation. Like most... If you think about it, most of them, even Porky's and stuff, it's not like full-blown shagging all the way through.
No. There's a plot. There's a reason, you know, that they're doing the things that they're doing. There just happens to be an abundance of nudity.
Right. So that's kind of what it is. And there's always music. A sex romp always has either a theme tune or some rockin' music or whatever. And this one, Getting Lucky, one of the things that was a sheer joy about this film, and Michael Paul Gerard is also a composer, so I would imagine he probably did some of this music himself. Yes, he did, along with a lady by the name of Miriam Cutler. He went on to do quite a bit of sound. She was Emmy nominated, Miriam Cutler.
Not for this movie.
No. But she's been working constantly. She kind of started with these lower budget movies and has now been doing quite a few bigger things.
Good for her. She finally put in her 10,000 hours and it's starting to pay off.
It's starting to pay off. Although looking at some of the titles of these later movies, I'm not quite sure. But
hey, do you have an Emmy nomination?
No, I don't have an Emmy nomination, no.
Well, then I guess she's doing better than both of us combined.
Yeah, so go fuck yourself, John Cross.
Yeah.
Miriam Cutler has a sweet, sweet Emmy. You don't.
Well, she's got a nomination anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly. So
yeah, she did, hey, fuck her. She didn't win.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's not that good.
So her and Mike, they do songs. And what I love about the songs is if you listen to them closely, they are definitely commenting on what our protagonist is going through at that time.
Yeah.
So there's the first song and the kind of song that gets a reprise all the time is, you know, you can do it if you dream, and when you dream it, it can come true, and that kind of thing. And then when he is miniaturized along with our leprechaun and is, well, she sits on the bike saddle that he's miniaturized on, and he climbs into her underwear, and then in an attempt to climb up her pubic mound, ends up giving her an orgasm in a classroom while a teacher very excitedly talks about the Colorado River flooding the Grand Canyon. Because the metaphor in this movie is subtle.
obviously. The best part about that whole scene isn't even the fact that Bill is trying to climb up her pubes to get... to get away from her vagina, which he's obviously been trying to get into when he's been full-size Bill the entire movie.
Right.
Trying to get not,
but not,
that's
in,
not
in a bad way like Tony, in a sweet way.
Right,
like,
right.
Like normal people.
That's not the ridiculous part. The most ridiculous part is the fact that the leprechaun shrunk himself also.
Yes.
Why would the leprechaun shrink himself?
He shrunk everything. He even shrunk the wrench. And the beer bottle and everything.
Everything. Like, he was just like, whoop, sorry. I'm not a very good leprechaun.
I'm not
shrunk
a very good
everything.
Leprechaun. I'm terribly sorry. I've shrunk us both down. Yeah.
I literally shrunk everything. Like, why didn't the bike shrink then? Like, if everything that was on top of the bike shrank, including the beer bottle and the wrench and everything, why didn't the bike also shrink?
Well, wasn't it everything that was in his hand?
Yes. Well, everything that was on Bill's person, basically.
Right. Yeah. Including his clothes and everything else.
Right.
And even though... the funny thing is, okay, so the very end of this movie, they have got married. And...
Before you go any further, this movie goes from, like, let's say, like, a 4 or 5. Like, you know, at the beginning, you're like, I don't know about this. Then it builds, and you're like, okay, I kind of like this. And then after they get married, it goes from like a 5 to like a 15.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, it goes from I can get along with this to what the hell is happening?
And
like all of a sudden it goes from normal to super ridiculous.
In the greatest way possible. The only reason I'm bringing up the very end is that at the very end he explains the situation with the leprechaun and everything. Because he's forced to by the policemen who have been following him, who think he's a drug dealer because he got a new car and lots of money, when really that's the leprechaun doing all that.
Right.
And when he explains it to her and then sees the leprechaun again because he happens to turn up in a non-alcoholic champagne bottle, I'm not quite sure how, but anyway, he does, at the very end when they're on their honeymoon, she seems really happy. Whereas actually she should feel violated because
of course.
While he was miniaturized by the leprechaun, said sequence took place. So maybe the thing we don't see is after the credits roll, her face go from, oh, this is wonderful, we have a leprechaun, to, hang on a second, was that you in the classroom that violated me without my permission? But I suppose we're meant to, because it's, that sequence is played very much for comedy. We're kind of meant, and fantasy. We're kind of meant to go along with that bit.
Right. Yeah. I to be completely honest, I didn't have a problem with that whole section whatsoever.
No.
I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I love this. The fact that the teacher kept stopping and being like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. And then she goes back to, like, you know, very loudly moaning.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, it looks like she's having sex with the chair. Like, she keeps rubbing herself on the chair.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck? But the teacher just keeps talking. The teacher just goes right back into the overtly sexual lesson. And
talking about the pilgrims coming and all this sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was fine with all of that, by the way.
Yes, and then the fact that, of course, what follows is the shower sequence.
Well, yeah. Well, we went about 15 minutes without seeing anybody's tits.
Yes.
So we can't have that.
Which was awkward because there was clearly a moment where the four women concerned obviously had to remove their clothing because the whole idea was how was he going to get out of her underwear if he didn't, you know, if they didn't get naked. So, and the camera clearly, like what he told the women in question was, and I can imagine this, he's like, I'm going to have the camera all the way back in the corner of the dressing room. You just quickly take off your clothes from behind. Like, we just see your bum. We don't see anything else. Put your towels around and kind of walk. So it's sort of this awkwardly leering shot while at the same time, I presume, trying to be respectful because it's not all, like, close-ups.
Right.
So it's, but it has the opposite effect rather than being respectful. It just looks like you're a peeping Tom.
Yeah, of course. It's like you can clearly tell the director is just off the shot to the left or whatever, and he's like, okay, now everyone take your tops off.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now everyone take your underwear off. Okay, good. And towels on. And all right, now walk over here.
And it's sort of awkwardly slow. And also, it's completely unnecessary considering the very next sequence they're in the shower and all of them are completely naked. So
right.
There is absolutely no need to see a ponderously long undressing scene. But again, the music comes in to save us because over the top you have got that woman singing, who may be Miriam Cutler, we just don't know. Emmy nominated Miriam Cutler singing,
right.
Take your clothes off, like over the top of the sequence, which kind of does save it.
It really does. You know, I will say, sometimes when you watch these movies and you're like, man, this soundtrack is really bad. And then every once in a while you find a soundtrack, you're like, wow, this is really good. Lost Boys comes to mind. Like when you watch the Lost Boys, you're like, this is a good soundtrack.
Well, I still believe.
Right. Exactly. But when you see something like this where they're literally just describing what's happening, you're like, this couldn't be more on the nose and I love it. Like it if they were to put in bad music or like sexy saxophone or something, you're like, all right, it's not worth it. Why even put music in if it's going to be that bad? You know,
yeah.
This was bad, but on a good scale. And it's hard to explain that. But when they're literally explaining what's happening and then using that song over and over again, you're like, OK, I get it. Like
it's funny,
it's
yeah.
very tongue in cheek and I love it.
And it's where Jean Stewart as Babette gets her moment in the her moment in the sun, but it's her moment in the shower, complete with soap. And we get the adventures of miniaturized Bill in the water, slowly being sucked towards the drain. He clings onto the soap for dear life, which then gets rubbed all over Babette. And then just before they hit the drain again, decides to regrow himself, become large again, use the leprechaun's power, Lepke's power to make him big again.
Right.
Which, and this was another favorite thing, meant that the glasses and the wrench, which had been miniaturized, suddenly appeared full size in Chrissy's underwear.
Right.
To which
obviously.
She wasn't that bothered by it. She just kind of pulled them out and threw them in her locker. And later didn't.
Oh, what is this wrench doing in my panties? No big deal.
Which I did enjoy. I enjoyed that a lot. And I thought it was fun the way he resized himself in the shower. Babette screamed, but then later Babette went, had I known it was you, I never would have screamed.
Right.
She was up for it. She was quite happy that he saw her naked.
Yeah.
And then there
was that. She likes a good peeping Tom. Why not?
Then there was the awkward scene where she went from, I don't think we should see each other, too. I think we should go steady. And I never quite followed that. That she seemed
right.
to go from we shouldn't be together to let's go steady very quickly.
Well, she clearly has bipolar because she was like, I'm gonna go bang Tony. And then they start like fooling around. She's like, but I don't want to have sex. And you're like, well, what are you doing? And this is another example of that. She does the same thing with Bill. Like, they start fooling around when they're just sitting on the lawn or whatever. They're just kind of hanging out and looking at the stars, and they start fooling around. And then she's like, nah, I changed my mind. Like, She's always changed her mind. She definitely has a mental disease or something. I don't know.
She quotes Brooke Shields and says that I don't think we should have sex till we're married. To which Bill humorously says, that's it. I'm boycotting all of her movies and TV shows from now on. Which I really like that line. I thought that was funny. I thought it was a good scene.
The After Movie Diner with John Cross will return right after this.
Hello, folks. This is a promo for a podcast called The Chris and Chris Show. I'm Chris with a C.
And I'm Chris with a K. The Chris and Chris Show is a movie podcast where myself and my colleague, Chris with a C,
hello,
discuss our thoughts on films from a wide variety of genres, all in our own inimitable style.
Here's what the masses are saying about the show. Funny, irreverent film analysis.
Reviews are great and spot on. Subscribe now.
The Chris and Chris Show is a slickly produced and fun podcast with two gents who have great chemistry.
They sound like two old men.
I don't read that one.
Oh, sorry. Keeps me intrigued and keeps me entertained.
There you have it. What are you waiting for? Head on over to www.wafo...
The audio equivalent of dysentery.
Stop reading the bad ones. What are you doing? Anyway, head on over to wafofm.com. That's wafufm.com to check out the show or subscribe to The Chris and Chris Show on iTunes.
Or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ The Chris and Chris Show. That's Chris with a C, Chris with a K.
Lovely.
The
Chris and
Chris Show. The biggest load of I've ever heard.
What are you doing?
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
Hello, this is for...
Can't we say hello at the same time?
Fuck's sake.
Hello!
This is an advertisement for Master Debaters.
Oh, can we say Master Debaters together as well?
Yeah? Hello! I'm Michael.
I'm Sean.
I'm Toffer.
And we are the Master Debaters.
Oh!
We're
supposed to say that
we are
the Master Debaters.
That's what we want to do. We're all saying it.
Yeah.
Hello! I'm Michael.
I'm Sean.
I'm Toffer.
And we are the Master Debaters.
I thought we were just doing...
Hello! I'm Michael.
I'm Sean.
I'm Toffer.
We are...
The Master Debaters.
You can find us on Twitter, @_MasterDebaters, SoundCloud, Podbean, and iTunes. Just do yourself a favour and jump aboard this podcast train.
Choo-choo, motherfucker!
You're listening to the sweet sounds of the After Movie Diner. Support us at patreon.com/AfterMovieDiner or I'll punch you in the teats. Rate and review us on iTunes, Earthling.
I did want to bring up, dude, who was his ginger best friend? Is that Tim?
Okay, so this best friend literally does not need to be in the movie. He's in the first 2 minutes of the movie.
But he's my favorite thing in the film. I love him.
And then he's at the very end, and you're like, where the fuck was this guy, like the supposed best friend the whole time? Like, shouldn't he be helping out somehow? Like,
well,
isn't that how these movies normally work?
He was, yeah. I mean, he wasn't helping him out at all, but he was in the middle a little bit. But I liked him because he was a ginger dude, clearly another nerd, carried around a saxophone the whole time. No explanation.
Saxophone and skateboard.
Yep. Called everyone man and dude the whole time. Yep. And ended up with Babette. Like, the man's a pimp.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I feel like Babette had run through literally every other guy in school. And she's like, well, I guess I'll bang saxophone skateboard guy. I don't know.
I'll go with the ginge.
I'll hang out with Rick Astley, I guess. I don't know.
When you've, as we like to say, when you've worn out your minge, you go with the ginge. That's what we like to say here on the After Movie Diner.
Right. That's the new tagline. That's the new header on the website. Check it out.
It is. Check it out. When you've destroyed your minge, end up with the ginge. But I liked him. I thought he was fun. The way he just showed up. No, I can't do that today, dude. I got to go play my saxophone and ride on my skateboard.
And then he just ride off, like, playing the saxophone and skateboarding at the same time. You're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Greatest man in the high school ever. Greatest king of the high school. If only we knew.
That's just the tip of the iceberg of, like, weird shit that happens in this movie too, right? Like, yeah. I mean, there's a scene towards the end after they get married and they let Tony out of jail, where
because they take it down from attempted rape to indecent exposure,
right? Because, like, for whatever reason, and he was also trying to give them dirt on Bill, like saying, like, Bill's a drug dealer, right? So they kind of gave him a bit of a plea deal, and they were going to let him go. So of course he's going to go back and get his girl, right?
Right.
Because he didn't follow all the way through. It was just attempted rape. It wasn't full on rape before. He was going to finish the job.
But it was kind of weird. Yeah, he was. That's what's really disturbing about the last bit. But like Bill says to Chrissy, I love you. She says, I love you back. He says, will you marry me? She says, yes. Her mum then says, no. Bill then goes to the mum, and that's when he says that bit about, you know, we're going to be a doctor, she's going to be a nurse, we're going to open up a clinic, probably not here, somewhere where they need us. We're going to help the world, two people at a time. We love each other, blah, 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 blah. The mother then says, fine, get married. So they get married. They get into his dad's car. This was another continuity error, I'm sure, probably because the Pinto really did break down, or it was his friend's car and he didn't have access to it. The Pinto that the leprechaun made appear apparently finally broke down. Yet we just saw a sequence where he asked the leprechaun for enough money for gas and repairs on the Pinto for the next X amount of years.
Yeah, so he said like 5 years or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he literally planned out all of his money to pay for all of his future expenses, including the car itself.
Yeah.
And then literally the next day, the car's gone.
Yeah. Which is, you know, that's what happens on these low-budget movies, right? The guy's like, sorry, your uncle needs the Pinto back. And he's like, but I'm filming this movie. And he's like, fuck it, tough. So instead, he's driving in this big beat-up junker that probably really was his dad's car, I don't know. And in the back seat, dun-dun-dun, twist of twists, Tony appears with malevolent intent and kicks him out of the driver's seat and then handcuffs her and drives off. And suddenly the movie goes up a notch. First of all, we're out into the countryside. Secondly, there's this car. Thirdly, Tony shows up. There's handcuffs. Then what happens, Jay? Go over the next insanity.
So they drive out to the middle of nowhere, and all of a sudden, as he's running down the road, Bill sees a guy standing on two horses.
Yeah.
Who is this guy? He looks like a weird, like, barbarian. Like, I don't know. I couldn't even describe this guy if I wanted to. Furthermore, they never really did a close-up shot of the guy, so you couldn't really see who he was. Yeah. But there was a guy, 1 foot on one horse, 1 foot on the other, standing on the horse's back, riding the horses down a hill. Yeah. Who the fuck does that?
Genghis Khan-looking guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he comes down the hill, and Bill's like, hey, can I borrow a horse? And the guy's like, no, I gotta stand on these horses.
He goes, I have got 2 feet. I need two horses.
But don't worry, I have a third horse off screen. And gives him the third horse from off screen. Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Where is this? Where do they live that Genghis Khan, the road warrior guy, who's standing on horses?
Yeah.
You know,
he's like,
I'm lousy on horses, but I got no saddle. Guess I'm gonna have to stand up.
Yeah,
I don't know. So now there's a pursuit between Bill on a horse and Tony in the stolen dad's car.
But as he rides off on the white horse to get his lady back, because there was a thing earlier about like a white knight and a princess or something like that, and this is sort of the fruition that come into fruition. But what's funny is, as he rides away from the Genghis Khan looking guy, he's like, he will never catch up with him. What a fucking loser. Like, the Genghis Khan dude is like insulting him. Oh, and I forgot to mention the thing that the first thing that made me really, really laugh was when they were at the drive-in and Bill gets out and is calling for Chrissy. People in the background going, shut up, you bastard! That really made me laugh. I thought that was hilarious. So anyway, Genghis Khan insults him. He rides off, and then what happens?
Right. All right, so he eventually catches up because, you know, Tony decides, all right, here's a good spot for me to accomplish my original intent of rape. So they pull off. He gets out. He drags Chrissy out of the car. Eventually, Bill catches up to them, and coincidentally enough, there's some people having a picnic nearby.
Yeah, not only that, but Tony has picked the one place where he is going to take his chained up, bride, right by a couple having a grill out picnic.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I'll pull over here. There's people here. Obviously, this is a good place to pull over. You know. There's literally no one for miles except for Genghis Khan standing on horses and these two people. So pulls over, rips her out of the car. He's going to accomplish his deed. Eventually, Bill catches up, sees the people. They're cooking kebabs on the grill. So, of course, what's going to happen? Kebab sword fight, clearly.
Yeah.
They just rip hot metal off of the grill with, you know, meat and vegetable on it, and they're like, okay, sword fight time. Clearly, that's the only way we can solve our differences.
Tony does it, and Bill goes, now look what you've done. You've ruined this lovely people's picnic.
Right. And Bill is so concerned about everybody else that he's like, oh, I'm sorry about ruining your picnic. Like, no, but now I get a sword fight. So they literally start kebab skewer sword fighting.
Yeah, with Tony going on about this is just like nature. Whoever wins this fight gets to fuck Chrissy. The mare looks on while the two stallions fight. And then...
Right. And then there literally is two horses fighting in the background. Genghis Khan, again, lousy with horses. There's just fucking horses everywhere, right? And there's two horses, like, going at it. They're kicking each other. They're like, you know, they're literally kicking each other and going... And so, you know, you can see a little bit off in the distance, and then, like, it slowly goes into focus. Ooh, horse fight, you know, skewer sword fight, horse fight, skewer sword fight, horse fight. Going back and forth, and what do you know? Good always triumphs over evil when Tony goes in. Does he stab a bee's nest?
Yeah, he stabs a bee's nest, yeah.
And the bees all attack him, and he's going to run off being stung by bees.
Yeah.
And Bill wins
the
day.
After bees!
Bill wins the day and then once again apologizes to the people doing the picnic. Sorry that we ruined your dinner.
And they stand up and applaud.
Right. Well, obviously, when you see someone win a duel, you stand up and applaud that man.
So just when you thought, like, it's going to end with them getting married. Nope. There's this whole other situation with horses and fighting and kebabs and picnics and people and clapping and things. And then you think, right, now it's going to end. But no. We go to the Motel 6 or wherever the hell they're staying for their honeymoon. It's like
the No-Tell Motel is where they go.
The sleazy, scum-ridden, probably syphilis sheets motel.
Right.
And the two cops, which I just thought had that subplot was over, they show up.
Yeah, they kick in the door Miami Vice style.
And the best thing is, because... Bill is trying to remove Chrissy's handcuffs with a nail file, and the two police burst in and put that nail file down as if it's a deadly weapon,
right.
Which I like. And then they go through all the stuff. So they're saying, like, you're a drug dealer and you mailed something to Ireland. And then he tells him the full story about the leprechaun and everything like that. He says, well, you might not be dealing drugs, but you're certainly on them, because that story is ridiculous. He doesn't find any drugs, but he finds a bottle of champagne under the bed, but it's non-alcoholic champagne, so they've got nothing on him. And as he goes to leave, he says, do you have a spare handcuff key? And then he undoes the handcuffs. You look like there's going to be trouble in paradise, because Chrissy's like, why did you lie to them? I thought the whole point was we were always going to be honest, and I can't believe you told that story. And And then just as that's about to happen, he opens up the champagne and in the leprechaun's inside there. So that kind of answers the thing. He didn't lie to her. They're all honest, happiness, and it ends.
Right. But what we don't know is if he mailed the leprechaun in the beer bottle back to Ireland, how the fuck did he get back into this champagne bottle? A right. full champagne bottle at that.
Well, they say that they got lost in the mail. Right. That's the right. explanation
so,
there.
So somehow he got transported into a different bottle, which is great. I mean,
but Jay, there was a man riding two horses.
But there was, but Genghis Khan was standing on two horses.
I think
that's what they should have called this. If they called this movie Genghis Khan Standing on Two Horses, I would own stock in that movie. That's yeah. how many times I would purchase that movie. They'd be like, why don't we just give you some back end? It'd be much easier.
Yeah. And it's sort of what's first of all, that really does save it. Like the more surreal it becomes and the more ridiculous it becomes, it does save it. I like the fact that when he was inside her underwear, for example, she had a mass of thick black pubic hair because this was the late 80s. And right. that's how we rolled back then. And I think we should roll like that way again. I really do like thick black, you know, matted. You know, that's really how pubes should be.
I don't know. Again, I'm not the aficionado here. I'm certainly not the Hugh Hefner of this situation.
Right.
But again, I feel like if you're going to have a lot of pubes and you're a blonde girl, you should definitely have thick black pubes.
Black pubes, yeah. That a miniaturized version of your future husband can climb up.
Can hastily climb up and fall into your vagina.
Yeah.
At one point, he falls into her vagina.
Yeah. He does. And so I think in a weird way, because I was texting you at the beginning of the movie and being like, wow, okay, fuck, what? Like, yeah, not sure what this is all about.
Yeah, I tried to warn you.
But I think like most trauma movies, it gets through and gets by on sort of joyful nonsense and, you know, guts and spirit and what, you know, and stick it all together with spittle and snot kind of thing. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
And it does have some good ideas in there and the music is good and it's not edited sloppily. Like it's edited pretty well. Like it flows, it moves as a, right. as a story.
The things that happen, you know, the guy showing up with the horses and then the horse fight and, you know, the sword fight and all that kind of stuff. That stuff's ridiculous, but it does all flow from beginning to end. You do believe that this is like 1 or 2 weeks in the life of these kids.
Right.
Like at no point are you like, what the, like, are they jumping around in time? And like, at no point are you like this, even this is unbelievable. Yeah. The horse fight in the fucking guy with the horses was ridiculous, but it was still somewhat believable.
And I loved the two cops, the leather jacket, popped collar, Miami Vice style cops. I like those a lot. I was a big fan of those. Like I said, loved saxophone skateboard guy. I think that's Tim, but I don't know. I would have to
I want to call him Saxophone.
Saxophone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And then, of course, a lot of the credits in this movie are fake and have purposefully sexualized names. So you have Richard Gisperter, for example, was the first assistant director.
I know him. I grew up with him.
And Wayne Carr, or Wanker, was the Foley editor. You have Harry Balzac, Hans Job. Hans Job was the key grip. And various other names.
Right.
Lucy Pussett. But no, so there's some fun things about it. And, you know, everything we said about at the beginning, it is kind of awkward just the way it was made.
Yeah, but they clearly needed a bad guy to... I mean, Bill was such a nerdy, do-gooder, save-the-world kind of guy that, you know, if the character of Tony wasn't aggressive, then the movie wouldn't have made sense. Did they go too far? Maybe, but it wouldn't have worked if he wasn't a super aggressive guy.
No, but if you think of the punks and bikers and gang members and weirdos and freaks in like a normal trauma movie are so played, like dialed up to 12. You know what I mean? They've always got like high evil voices and they're always like, they're always like punks and weirdos and freaks, right?
And they're dirty and they have spikes sticking out of everything.
Right. Yeah. And one will have a pig nose and whatever. That you kind of, if they're disgusting and if they're filthy and if they're, abusive or rapey or whatever, you go with it because they're so, like, larger than life. You know, the guy playing Tony, he attempts to be sort of over the top and a little bit more like, yes, men fighting men and da 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 da. And he tries to be a bit more kind of over the top. But he's so normal almost and so kind of a regular jock in a movie type guy that's where the trauma elements in this movie sort of are lost a little bit because he's not a caricature.
He wasn't ridiculous enough for you to have that suspension of belief that he is a real person.
Right. Like at no point in something like Tromeo and Juliet do I think that anyone is actually in any kind of peril.
No, of course not.
But in this one, not that I thought anyone was in peril in this one, but I just meant they weren't good enough actors to kind of pull it off. And that made those sequences awkward. But beyond that, the TV radio teacher songs, all the soundtrack that's in the back of the movie, commenting on what's going on in the movie or having like a weird comical metaphor to what's going on in the movie. That's great. Like, that's really funny. Saxophone skateboard dude. That's great. Babette. She's hilarious. The shrink scene, the guy on the horses, like all that stuff works and is fun and silly. And even the leprechaun, like the way that guy plays it, works well enough. Like, I like his little rhymes when he rubs the little ball bearing or whatever it is he's rubbing to make this. He's always like, "Twinkly tum, twiddly dee, I will make you rich and me," or something. He has like little rhymes and stuff. The sequence where Tony is put under a spell and hits himself with his tennis racket and then rams the tennis racket up his ass.
Up his own ass, yeah. Well, obviously, I mean, if you're going to have magical powers as a leprechaun, you might as well have a guy shove a tennis racket up his own ass. I mean, that's day number one. I mean, that's like,
you
they
should
have put
that
in the
morning.
First scene.
Yeah.
Right. Like, all right, so you woke up, you had a guy shove a tennis racket up his ass, then I had some coffee and some breakfast, and I got my day started. I mean, everybody knows that.
So if you become a leprechaun through, or find out, like if you find out, Jay, that
I've always been a leprechaun?
That your lineage, that your genealogy, your family tree traces you back to leprechaun, and you actually have leprechaun powers.
Right.
That's the first thing you do. It doesn't even have to be someone you don't like. You're just sticking a tennis racket up someone's butt.
All right. Well, I just want you to know, I did look into my lineage, and it goes all the way back to the American Bald Eagle. So I'm 164th American Bald Eagle, so everybody knows that.
Just so everyone knows that.
Right.
Because there's none more free than Jay Mayo. I don't know if I made that clear at the beginning of this episode. But he rides with the wolves under Lightning.
I may even take flight later on. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
That's your right, because you're free, and you live freer than anyone else.
And I don't let anybody tread on me. That's true.
You don't let anyone tread on you. And you are a better carpenter than Jesus H. Christ. That is fact.
That's very clear.
He never made a media center that stayed up the way yours did. Or a coffee machine stand.
True. Or chairs.
Or chairs. Multiple chairs.
Many chairs.
Because if he had... many
Jesus
chairs.
Jesus only made the one chair and the leg broke. So I'm just saying, might be better than Jesus.
Had a table. I'm just putting it out there, people.
Right.
J-Mayo.
You can form your own decisions. Better I'm just giving Christ. You the facts. Better than Christ.
164th bald eagle and right. possibly descended from leprechauns. And if you say anything, he will make you shove a test racket up your ass.
Right. Furthermore, hashtag don't tread on me.
Hashtag give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Hashtag tennis racket. Hashtag butthole.
Hashtag right, standing on horses.
I'm going to add that. I think as Matt Farley and I coined the phrase angry, I was standing on a cake, which is such an in joke because you have to have listened to one particular episode of the Motown Media Infomercial podcast to understand that joke. But anyway, you should know that there is a phrase that says angry, I was standing on a cake. I think now we should have the phrase in trouble, I was standing on two horses.
Or it has to do with something about being ridiculous. Like, okay. This is more ridiculous than standing on two horses.
Yeah, more ridiculous than standing on two horses.
Right.
Angry, I was standing on a cake. More ridiculous, I was standing on two horses. So we've coined a new phrase here today, Jay, because that's how we roll on the Aftermovie Diner. We live it free.
That's true. You can now get that on a T-shirt. Go to aftermoviediner.com and get your more ridiculous than standing on two horses T-shirts.
Tomorrow you will get, I'm telling you right now, tomorrow that will be a T-shirt. Hashtag T-shirt.
Hashtag T-shirt. Hashtag standing on two horses.
If you go to cafepress.com/aftermoviediner, because by the time they hear this, it will be a T-shirt.
If it's not, I literally am going to set your house on fire. I just need everybody to know that.
So go to cafepress.com/aftermoviediner. And the T-shirt, is it going to be hashtag standing on two horses? Is that the T-shirt?
Oh, no. I think it should just be like, it should just say something like more ridiculous than standing on two horses.
More ridiculous than standing on two horses. That T-shirt will be available tomorrow, along with the classic T-shirts. Other designs that are available, apart from obviously the Aftermovie Diner design, is we do have the design. I hope one day we'll all have a friend like Karate Pete. Susan Sarandon's monkey is dead. That's a T-shirt you can buy over at cafepress.com/aftermoviediner, as is the T-shirt Don't Knock the Quark. So these T-shirts are already available, and I will be adding to that tomorrow, more ridiculous than standing on two horses.
I love it. Yeah. Straight up and down.
Hashtag movie, Genghis
patrons,
Khan.
You need
hashtag Genghis Khan. Hashtag Genghis Khan. Hashtag tennis racket butthole.
Hashtag tennis racket. So all the diner patrons need to go to the Cafe Press site. Go to aftermoviediner.com, click through the link, and buy yourself literally one of each of the shirts.
Yeah.
Maybe two. If you want to get a backup, I recommend that because you never know. Maybe you'll spill something on it. Maybe you'll put it through the laundry and it'll shrink or discolor. I don't know. Maybe. You always want to have one of these shirts on hand at all times.
You
so
can
get each one of them.
A plain white Karate Pete T-shirt for just $18.39. That's amazing,
I mean,
right there.
They're basically giving them away.
Yeah. You can get a Susan Sarandon's Monkey is Dead baseball jersey style shirt for $20.69.
Which, let's be honest with each other, that's the best kind of shirt to get. Baseball shirts? Are you fucking kidding me?
And you can pick your own sleeve color from three attractive choices, black, red, and blue. And before people ask, there is a picture of a dead monkey on that T-shirt.
Well, of course there would be. Why wouldn't there be?
So Susan Sarandon's Monkey is Dead, complete with dead monkey picture.
Fantastic. Buy three of them. Get one of each of the sleeve colors. Don't be an idiot. Get them now while the offer still lasts.
Or,
these aren't going to be around forever. Get them while they're hot off the press. Cafe Press.
If you're as manly as Jay Mayo, you may want to go with the sleeveless tee.
Suns out, guns out.
Suns out, guns out. They also do a men's tank top.
Oh,
yes. Sweet, sweet sleeveless tank top.
if you wanted someone to see your side boob,
yeah,
because obviously you do, do it by going through cafepress.com/aftermoviediner and get one of these great graphic men's tank tops. So not only can you get a fun design on the front of it, but you can also show people your side boob.
It's a wonderful. It's wonderful. Unfortunately, although we do have kids and baby size stuff, we do not have a Susan Sarandon Monkey is Dead baby tee. You can only get After Movie Diner stuff on babies. There is no dead monkeys on babies, I'm afraid.
Right. We're going to call IT. We're going to fix that.
There is also some Beard Love products on the After Movie Diner gift kiosk. There is To Hell With Milk, Got Beard? ? There is Yes, I Have a Beard, What More Do You Need to Know? There's I Don't Need a Superpower, I Have a Beard. There's three different styles of that, by the way. And there's also I Don't Know What the Question Is, but the answer is More Beards. And there's
right.
There's two designs of that. So the After Movie Diner kiosk, really, you haven't lived until you've gone and explored cafepress.com/aftermoviediner. And don't forget, more ridiculous than standing on two horses. # Genghis Khan. # tennis racket butthole.
Get them today.
So, Jay Mayo, thank you ever so much. I must now wrap this up, but thank you so much for covering Get Lucky from 1990, available now at all good slaughterhouses. Jay, where can the listening minis find you? And enough pimping my crap. Pimp your stuff, sir, before we wrap this up.
Well, thank you, sir, for having me. The diner patrons can find me on my podcast, Hold the Mayo. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and everywhere else that podcast can be found. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. That is a big help for us. We've got lots of stuff going on. Our website is corruptaudio.com. Right now, the website is down because it's being rebuilt, not unlike the After Movie Diner just was recently. So we are rebuilding the website. You can check that out. We're also all across social media at Hold the Mayo Pod on Twitter, at Hold the Mayo Podcast on Instagram, and Facebook.com/Hold the Mayo Podcast. Make sure you check us out. You can also go to funnybroad.com and you can check out my co-host, Marie Forster. She does lots of great stuff there. She is a Huffington Post contributor and she does a fun thing on Sundays. # Watch Mario Eat, where she features a local newscaster being completely ridiculous. So check that out. Follow the # on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Watch Mario Eat, and go to her website, funnybroad.com.
Excellent. So everyone do that, because Marie and Jay are by far two of the funniest and two of the greatest humans who have ever breathed, and they are both American.
That's true.
So that makes them free. And with that, sir, I want to say it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight. This will go up this week. Yeah. Let's do this again very, very soon.
Well, thank you so much, John. I love coming on here. I love talking about movies. Also, check out Jay Mayo's Tasty American Trauma Reviews on the aftermoviediner.com. We have a lot more videos coming to you in 2017, including but not limited to maybe this particular movie. Maybe I'll secondarily review this movie, Getting Lucky.
He's going to double up on the Getting Lucky, much like a man riding two horses.
That's right.
With that, Jay has transmogrified into a glorious golden eagle, has squawked and flown off into the night atop wolves with lightning. Sweetheart.
You've been listening to the After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.